Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. Just a heads up, there's a lot of fonts in this section again, so that's not going to be very interesting, and I will try to treat them briskly. And that starts right now with the first package called Tib Machuni. It is the Tibetan Machine Unicode font, the Tibetan and Himalayan Digital Library's Unicode character-based Tibetan Machine Uni OpenType font for writing Tibetan, Dzongkha and Ladakhi in DBU, CanScript, with full support for the Sanskrit combinations found in Khoskhad texts. I don't know what any of that means. You can go to thdl.org for more information. That's the Tibetan Himalayan Digital Library.org, THDL. But functionally, it will send you really to, I mean, it won't send you, but there's a button there because THDL is still a work in progress. So instead, you'll end up going over to their current site, which is thlib, Tibetan Himalayan Library, thlib.org, which is a fascinating site. It's just one of those sites where, you know, you would just never, or at least I would have never ended up there hadn't it been for a font package for Tib Mach Uni font, TTF. And then you suddenly find yourself on this digital library site, and it's got such a unique look at a place, yeah, that you just never have gone otherwise. It's fascinating, but I certainly am not knowledgeable about it, so I won't try to report on it. But yeah, it is super interesting. And then the next package is Transset. Transset is a application supposedly for setting the transparency of an application window. So if I, for instance, launch OClock from the previous episode, now I've got a clock, and I'm going to position this clock if I can. Yeah, there we go. Position it over something, and then I'm going to do transset -h, actually, because I don't remember the exact. Oh yeah, it's let's do --dec as in decrease or decrement, and then do a 0.5. Hit return, and now I've got a little pointer icon as my my mouse cursor is a little pointer, and I'm going to click the OClock window, or the OClock, you know, the clock. And now it says that it has set the property to 0.5, which says to me that the transparency or opacity, depending on which way you look at it, has been reduced from 1.0 to 0.5, meaning it should be halfway transparent or halfway opaque, right? I mean, that's what that says to me. And that's not what happened, though. The OClock is still fully opaque. So I don't know. And OClock, I've tried it with a couple of different applications. I have not had any luck in affecting the transparency of a window, at least within this Plasma desktop session. Maybe it's a thing about the compositor that I'm using, I don't know, but Transset explicitly does not work the way that it says it's supposed to work. That's all I got for you. Next package is TTF-Indic-Fonts. This is a collection of free fonts supporting some of the widely used Indic scripts. Included are TTF fonts for Bengali, Devanagari, Gujarati, Kannada, Malayalam, Oriya, Punjabi. There's one that I recognize. Tamil, I recognize that, and Telugu. That's more fonts. What can you do? TTFTLWG. This is Thai TTF fonts. And then finally we get to TWM, which I thought for some weird reason that we were going to get to way back in the previous episode. I don't know why I thought that then. But TWM is a Linux desktop that was specifically developed, as I understand it, as a I guess kind of a fallback desktop environment if you had downloaded X11 and so you needed a desktop environment. That was the idea. From what I understand, what I'm kind of imagining is that they were sitting around developing Xorg. They decided, you know what we should do is, we can't ship a graphic server without also an environment to launch to. And so it was TWM. That was like, if all else fails and you manage to launch X, you ought to end up in a desktop, and the desktop you end up in should ideally, unless something's gone wrong, be TWM. The TWM acronym stands for either Timeless Window Manager or Tabbed Window Manager. I've seen both online. Either way, when you launch TWM, it's a more robust desktop than you might think. Like if you've ever ended up in TWM on accident, which actually used to happen quite a lot on early Linux, you would be struggling to get X11 to work at all. And then finally you'd get to a point where, yes, you can launch X, but you haven't filled out your .xinit file. .xinitrc? I don't know. Whatever that file is. You hadn't filled it out yet. So you would just end up with the default X11 desktop, which was TWM, and it was the weirdest thing. If you left click, usually if memory serves, it was just a black screen with a big X as your mouse cursor. So it's not... It didn't do itself any favors, in other words. Like, it started with literally a black screen and just the letter X as your cursor. It couldn't even give you a pointer. Couldn't even fake a pointer. Like, if you can do an X, you could at least do, like, a caret, you know, like a little pointy thing. But nope, they just made it X. So you'd end up on this blank screen with an X cursor, and maybe if you were clever, you would try clicking, and maybe if things were set up correctly, you'd get a menu. And that menu very frequently had exactly one application listed, and that was Xterm. So you could launch an Xterm, but the way that it launched it was super weird. The way that TWM launches an application once you've selected it from the menu is that it gives you sort of this wireframe shape of a window, and you are meant to drag it to where you want to place the window, and then you click to place the window on your desktop. So already this is just feeling really, really backwards, right? Like who gets a menu when they left click on a black screen? Who selects Xterm? And once you select Xterm, who on earth would want to draw the shape of the window and then manually place it on your desktop? It seems like nothing if you sort of, if once you've done it, it's like not a big deal. But if it's the first time you're witnessing it and you're used to a full desktop, then this doesn't seem right. This seems like something's broken. Okay, so there are more actions available with a right click or a middle click on the desktop or a Windows title bar. So once you've created that Xterm window, you can resize a window by middle clicking on the title bar and selecting resize. Now this places you into the resize mode, so now you can drag your mouse along the edge of the window that you want to make smaller or larger, and then you click again to confirm the new size. So again, kind of feels weird, like you don't just grab onto a handle, you middle click on the title bar, select resize. Lots of steps that just don't feel familiar. Now if you right click on the icon in the upper left corner of any window, like your Xterm window in this imaginary scenario, that's the only window you have. So you could right click on the icon, the little application icon, then that window is minimized into a little desktop icon. And you can think of this kind of like on macOS, they've got the dock, or at least they did. I don't know what they have now. on Ubuntu, they have the bar on the side. I forget what they call the bar, darn it. Is it just the dock? No. Panel? No. There's a fancy name for it. It's a good one, and I don't know why I can't think of it. But anyway, things minimize to that region, right? They go to that area to sit sort of in cold storage. And then you can relaunch the application from that little minimized icon. Well, on TWM, you can drag the icon anywhere on your desktop and then right-click it to restore it back to its full size. So again, just a little bit weird. Like, all the steps are, like, it all makes sense, but the way you get there are a little bit, just a little bit different to what you're used to. But there's a lot of configuration you can do to make TWM actually really kind of a cool and interesting desktop. It's primarily done in the .twmrc file, and there's a bunch of features in TWM. It does take work. Like, you have to be pretty clever to use all of the different things that it provides, because it's not, you know, it's not meant to be modern, right? It's meant to be timeless. So it does take work to kind of get it to be the way that you would expect a desktop to act. But there are lots of options and definitions in a config file in the TWMRC that you can use. There's, for instance, random placement, and that's an option that you can activate to randomly place a new window onto your desktop, so you don't have to manually click to set the location of every window you launch, which is huge. I mean, if you're going to use it for real, you probably don't really want to manually place every window, honestly. It's cute for the first three times, and then after that, you're just like, okay, just launch the application. There's also a option called Show Icon Manager, which displays a vertical taskbar. So that's kind of cool. Now, you can create, like, by default, like I said, that menu, when you left click on the desktop, it has exactly one thing listed, and that is Xterm. But you can define your own section of the menu. You do a menu space quote, I don't know, shells, close quote, and then a curly brace, and the first entry might be, you give it a title, so quote shells, close quote, and we'll define that as f.title. Next line, quote rxvt, close quote, and you define that with f.exec, quote urxvt, I know I just called it rxvt, but I'm launching urxvt, dash fg cyan dash bg black, those are those RGB values from the previous episode, dash cr, that's the cursor color, white, and then ampersand, close quote. All right, so now we'll have in a shell sub menu, we'll have rxvt listed, and then we could launch something else, like, or add something else, like a quote console, close quote, f.exec, console, ampersand, close quote, close curly brace. So now we've got shells, and in the shell submenu, there's rxvt and console. You can also set a background. You don't have to have a black background. You can actually just have whatever background you want. You can do this with the fe command, F-E-H. You might have to install it if it's not installed, but it's a really, really good one, especially if you're doing window management stuff. F-E-H, fe, space, dash, dash, bg, dash, fill, and then the path to whatever image you want to put as your wallpaper. And that could be something of user share, I don't know, wallpapers or whatever those things, backgrounds, whatever they're called. That could be from there, or it could be from, any image, obviously, right? I mean, it could be a color swatch that you like. I don't remember the options to change to like tile it versus scale it. I don't remember that. Well, I mean, I don't even remember if that is an option, but I'm assuming it is. I just don't see it in this TWMRC that I'm looking at. And there are a lot of really cool TWMRC files configuration options out there. There is the one file I know of that is like still online is at linuxquestions.org/questions/linux-desktop-74 /share-your-configuration-file-of-twm-best-x-windows-manager-417558-5974. I'll put that link in the show notes because it is like, seriously, it is 593 or almost 600 lines of working TWM options. I mean, this is a functional desktop that a user on Linux Questions actually used, or at least was using in 2016, which isn't that long ago, really. And there are some other sample links to sample files from the Arch Wiki as well. So there are some surviving sort of artifacts of people's configurations, and it's kind of an interesting thing to explore if you're curious about actually using TWM. I don't know that I would use it for very long. That's not to say it's not functional. Like, you could add other stuff to it. You could add tint, like a panel. You could add, or what is it, tint 2 now, I think, or the XFCE panel. That's really modular. So, I mean, you can kind of trick it out. My logic is that there are other options that are there. And certainly ones that I'm more invested in, like Fluxbox, even Enlightenment, to be honest. I don't know. It just seems like those might be, they kind of do the same thing as TWM, but maybe provide a little bit more, even more options. So I don't know. That's the way that I lean. But if you want to try out TWM, take a look at some of the sample TWMRCs, construct your own, see what you think. Definitely, I mean, like, if you haven't used a window manager as your primary desktop environment in the past, you should absolutely do that at some point in your life. Like, to me, that's a must. It really, really makes you reevaluate how you see a desktop. Because when you're just doing window management and you have to think about the extra components that you may or may not want, then, you know, I mean, it may make you fall in love more with desktop environments. I think it kind of did for me. Not that I don't like window managers, it's just I started to appreciate a little bit more the design and the luxuries that a full desktop environment does provide. But it also kind of gives you that sort of, I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but kind of like the bottom of the barrel, you know, kind of like, well, if I had a computer that couldn't run a full desktop environment, could I make that computer still usable? You look at a simple window manager and the answer is yeah, you can. Like, it's not scary. It's actually quite luxurious. It's fine. You'll love it. You'll like it. You can configure it. Everything that you need will be there. So it's quite empowering, I guess, in a way. So if you've not tried just the window manager, try that sometime on some computer. Give it a go, because it is quite the experience. Okay, it's time for a coffee break. So let's go get coffee. We'll come back and talk about you. I have a cup of coffee. No, wait, I said that wrong. I have an amazing cup of coffee. I have to say, I remember, what, three episodes ago, I was saying, oh, look at me. I don't care about coffee blends. I can drink any coffee. I'm happy with anything. Don't worry about it. I'm fine. I'll take bags of coffee and dump them into a big barrel, shake it up, and serve myself coffee, and I'm perfectly happy. I take it all back. So in my cupboard, I had just finished my big sort of mega blend of all the various coffee leftovers, you know, the bottom of the bag sort of coffee bucket. And I just finished that off. And I thought, how did I let this happen to myself? I'm out of coffee. But then in the back of my cupboard, I saw that there was one more bag of the Big Cozy. This is the winter blend from Flight Coffee. What makes it a winter blend? Nothing. Branding. It's just, they call it their winter blend. Big deal. Okay, so one bag of that. So I take it. It's 250 kg. No, 250 g. No kg. It's if it was 250 kg, that's a big bag. No, it was 250 grams. So I grab that, open it up, grind up some beans, throw it into the coffee pot, make a whole pot. I have a sip of it, and I'm thinking, yeah, it's coffee. That's coffee. Not a big deal. And then I go to work, and I'm sitting at my computer doing stuff, and I'm sipping this coffee. And after every sip, there's just this beautiful, I hate to do this, but I have to, you know, like a strawberry flavor or something. Or I don't know, maybe it's supposed to be orange or apricot or raspberry. I don't know. Some flavor in the back of my sort of mouth and throat. And it undercuts this coffee. And it's just this cheery little bright flavor. And a reason I hate to do this is because I'm describing flavor with flavor, and I hate that, but whatever. So yeah, there's just this sort of this little pit of brightness at the bottom of every sip, and it was just the best cup of coffee I've had in months, I tell you. I've also been measuring how much milk I put in my coffee, because I realized, because I sometimes I take my coffee black, sometimes I take it with milk. It kind of just depends on how I'm feeling that day. But I did note at one point that I was just kind of dumping milk into a cup, you know? And like sometimes I imagine I could have had a tablespoon, and other times I imagine I had a third of a cup. So I don't know, you know, it's like I need to get that sort of standardized. So I do now measure. If I'm going to take milk in the coffee, then I measure it. 1.5 tablespoons to, I don't know, what was this, 12, 16 ounce, whatever. Yes, I realize that none of these measurements equate. But yes, so I've been standardizing that, so that's helped. And then just doing the single blend or whatever, like the intended blend of coffee, at least when it's good coffee, and this is good coffee, it's important. It is. It's important. I mean, look, I'm still gonna mix stuff together if I have like two bags that just I can't be bothered, just dump them together, who cares? Or from the big bin store that I go to, because the coffee's cheaper there, and it just feels kind of wasteful not to go there. So I go there, I fill up a big bucket or a big, you know, container full of coffee beans, but they don't always have just one coffee that will fill my container, so I have to combine them. And that's just a necessary evil. But Flight, I apologize. Flight coffee. I will no longer treat Flight coffee with such flippancy. I'm going to respect it and drink it as intended, because man, it's good. So that's what's going on with coffee right now. It's very important. I felt like taking a good 4 minutes to talk about that was absolutely worth it. I'm sure you feel the same way. URW-Core 35 Fonts OTF. Yes, it is another font package. This one is a set of 35 standard URW++ PostScript fonts used by GhostScript, but provided in OpenType format, OTF, for programs like LibreOffice, which do not support PostScript Type 1 font formats. URW++ is not an abbreviation for a bunch of different languages, like CJK. URW++ is the font foundry, that is the company, the design group, whatever they call themselves, that has created this set of fonts. So these fonts, I've lost my package list, here it goes. URW Core 35, these fonts include things like some that I can't even read because they don't make logical sense, but Nimbus Mono, there you go, Nimbus Roman, Nimbus Sans. There is Standard Symbols PS, URW Bookman, URW Gothic, URW, that's it, Z003 Medium Italic. So I don't, that doesn't look like 35 to me, but I guess it must be. And to be fair, when they say 35, I guess they, I mean, really, there's only like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe 8 fonts, and then there are different, there are variations. So Nimbus Mono PS Bold, Nimbus Mono PS Bold Italic, Italic Regular. Oh no, and then there's Roman, so that's a unique thing, and then there's Sans, and then there's Sans Narrow. Yeah, so 35 does include all the little variants, all the, I don't remember what they're called, whatever Italics and Bold and Regular are called. I don't remember the term. UDL macros, that's next. This is a set of autoconf macros used by the configure.ac script in Xorg modular packages and is needed to generate new versions of configuration scripts with AutoConf. So these are specific AutoConf macros for when you're compiling an X.org or X11, whatever package. And these are as macros are. They are defined as .m4 files. You can look at them at /usr/share/aclocal/zorg-macros-m4. And you get things like zorg_prog_raw-cpp. And this is the kind of thing where, you know, it's a macro. So it does a certain set of functions in a specific order when required. So there's like the CPP checks to see what platform you're running before it goes and compiles this stuff. The Zorg man page sections and the SGML doc tools checks what version of the SGML tools you have available on your system. Zorg_check Linux doc. There's a docbook check. You get the idea. That's all the U's. So now we're into the V section. V as in Victor, or V as in view res, or view res. V-I-E-W-R-E-S. R-E-S again stands for resources, so I feel like it should probably be pronounced as res. But view res is the graphical version, more or less, of list res. List res I talked about, I don't know, 3 or 4 episodes ago. List res lists all of the X resources available, well, depending on what you specify, but yeah, it's a big list of the resources. View res does that, except in a nicely, a quirky little X11 GUI application. So you see that you see it sort of as a, not a flow chart, but, you know, like a tree, basically, a horizontally facing tree with the object being the top level, and then that going down to text source and text sync and rect, and then rect containing core and SME and so on. So you get all of the components of something. Next package is the Vulkan SDK. This is a big deal. As I've said, I won't go too much more about Vulkan, but I mean, this is Vulkan as created and maintained by the Kronos Group, khronos.org. It supports multiple GPUs. It has a bunch of libraries that can make calls out to lots of different graphic processors so that you don't have to figure out how to talk to something. All you have to do is make the call and it does all the work for you. It does all the translation work, and it also does a lot of the rendering work for you. I mean, it's got all the the basic sort of render functions is contained within this. There's a lot here. There are libraries, there are there's documentation, and there's binaries as well. There's header files, and you can try some of them out. I mean, you know, obviously you can try all of them out, but I mean, like, you can try, for instance, VK Cube. That creates a 3D spinning cube on your desktop. I mean, it's in a window, but it's a little bit like X Gears. I keep forgetting what that thing is. Yeah, it's got to be X Gears, right? Gears. Okay, so it's a little bit like Gears, where it just, you know, from, I think Gears is from Mesa 3D, right? I think is what we figured out in previous episodes, wherever that thing's from. It's a little bit like that, except it's obviously using the Vulkan, as you know, the Vulkan libraries to generate this sort of spinning cube. And that's all it does. It just spins. It's a cube that spins floating in gray space. That's all it does. But if you are evaluating a computer to see how it might perform, then you could try launching this just to see if it can handle that amount of 3D acceleration. You can define a frame count if you only wanted to spin a certain number of frames, --c, and then some number. You can tell it what number of GPU to use if you have more than one GPU in your system. You can define the width and the height and so on. So that's VK Cube. You can use Vulcan Info to get all the, just a big information dump of everything that your system, that the Vulcan SDK can identify about your system. So for instance, if I can get to the top here, I definitely launch this with less is the quick lesson here. Vulcan instance version 1.2.176. And I was looking for the, yeah, here it is. Layers count 18, VK layer, Intel, null, HW, Vulcan 1173. Devices count equals 2. GPU ID equals 0 is the NVIDIA GeForce GTX 1050. And the GPU ID 1, there we go, is the LLVM pipe, LLVM 1300256 bits. So that's kind of fun. You can get lots more information. I mean, that I was just zeroing in on the card that it could, that it was aware of. But I mean, there's a lot of properties that it will tell you about, you know, VK physical device limits, VK physical device conservative rasterization properties, and so on. Yeah, it just goes on and on. So that's just a nice, just a, it tells you everything that Vulcan knows. And I love that kind of thing. I was just complaining about that in the previous episode, how, what was it? Not show font, it was the other thing. Oh, set XKB map. Couldn't tell you what it was aware of. Couldn't tell you what you had available to you. But this one does. Another bunch of binaries that you'll see in the package are SPIRV, SPIRV, or SPIRV dash a bunch of other things like AS, CFG, cross, dis, less pipe, link, and so on. And what SPIRV is, if you imagine this, this was probably grossly technically inaccurate, but like the analogy for me is, you know how there's a Java virtual machine, right? Well, maybe you don't. Okay, so Java code, it runs everywhere, right? That's the magic of Java. Well, the reason Java runs magically everywhere is because Java doesn't know that your computer is the thing that it's running on. As far as Java knows, Java is running on this Java machine. The Java virtual machine is something that you install with, when you install Java, you're getting the JVM for free. Like that's just, it comes with Java. So now you've got JVM implanted on the device. And now when you run Java code, it makes a call to the Java virtual machine, and the Java virtual machine has been compiled specifically for your CPU. And so that's the connection. The Java code isn't targeting your CPU directly or your operating system. It is targeting the JVM. It just so happens that that JVM on whatever computer you're on has been finely tuned for that device. And that's why when you install Java, you can't just install Java. You have to install the Java for your operating system. Java for Windows, Java for Mac, Java for Linux, Java for Android, Java for whatever. So for Risk, probably, I don't know, whatever they have, like that's what you have to do. So SPIRV in a way is the Java virtual machine. It is the target that a that developers could use as their, as the thing that they're, that's going to render their graphics, or that's going to make their graphics and shaders and things happen. They can target SPIRV. Now SPIRV, and I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, maybe it's SPIRV or SPIRV, I don't know, but SPIRV is now compile, or you know, is finely tuned for a bunch of, well, Vulcan stuff that in turn is finely tuned for graphic processors, GPUs. This can be a big deal for people, either because they don't want to have to worry about what they're actually programming for. They just want a single interface, some thing that can abstract them away from the actual hardware. But it can also be important for companies that don't want to reveal how their hardware works to everyone else. So you can super secretly create a SPIRV target and not tell anyone how everything works, but as long as you're making sure that your thing works with SPIRV. So you're kind of, you're going at it from the other end, from the other side. If your hardware responds to SPIRV calls, then anything calling to SPIRV is going to be able to call to your hardware. So it's I don't want to say it's an abstraction layer, because I don't know that that's what it considers itself, but it is a, it is a powerful element within sort of the Vulcan system that lets people target, you know, a known factor for their with their compilers, so that that known factor can do whatever needs to happen between the code and the hardware. It is such a big deal that DirectX, which is not known for its openness or transparency, is going to support SpearV in their next release, DirectX 12. That's going to accept shaders compiled to SpearV. So that's a big deal. I mean, it's not a huge deal. It's not like DirectX is going open source or anything like that. It's not that big of a deal. But I mean, it is a big deal that DirectX, a very, very proprietary Microsoft system that is very frequently used for, you know, in video games, because video games are very frequently targeted. If they're going to be targeted to a PC, it's going to be to Windows. A lot of them are using, unfortunately, DirectX. I would use Vulkan myself, but they use DirectX for whatever reason. And it's kind of cool that the shaders are going to be SpearV, that it'll accept SpearV compatible shaders. That's a huge deal, because that means people don't have to do shaders for a bunch of different things. And without shaders, of course, you know, you just wouldn't have, you'd have shapes without any kind of definition, without any kind of vibrancy, without any kind of texture, without any kind of light response, that sort of thing. So shaders are a big deal in 3D graphics. SpearV helps bring shaders more cross-platform, which is great. So that's Vulkan SDK. I mean, there's a couple of other things in there, but the real appeal are the libraries, which are a little bit harder to talk about. Next up, it's just a little thing called the Wayland Display Server. So, Wayland, I've talked around it because this is the X directory, so it's kind of come up, obviously, here and there, but it is a replacement for the X11 Windows System protocol and architecture, with the aim to be easier to develop, extend, and maintain. That's from wayland.freedesktop.org. So Wayland is the language, that is protocol, that applications can use to talk to a display server in order to make themselves visible and get input from the user, which is a person. A user is a person. A Wayland server is called a compositor. Applications are Wayland clients. I think it is very funny. This is Klaatu. I think it is very funny that in the opening paragraph of a thing, they have to define terms by renaming existing terms. Wayland is a language protocol that applications can use to talk to a display server, blah, blah, blah. The user, that is a person. The Wayland server is called a compositor. Okay, so it's a server. Applications are Wayland clients. Okay, so they're applications. I'm imagining that they do this because they don't want confusion over, for instance, what a server is versus what a client is, which is a thing that got pretty confusing in X11. So that's what I'm assuming they're coming up with specialized terms in order to clear away any kind of confusion around what component is doing what. So for instance, if you were to talk about a Wayland client, you are not talking about a host, a computer. You are talking about an application. We know this because it says so in that opening paragraph. If you are talking about a user on Wayland, you are never talking about an application or code or some other machine. You are always talking about a person. We know this because it says so. Okay, so the Wayland architecture, generally speaking, is therefore Wayland compositor. That's the thing that's running, right? That is it. That's the server. That's the Wayland server. That's the thing that is making you see, that is enabling you to see things. Hooking into that are Wayland clients. Those, as we know, are applications that you have now launched. When you have launched an application, all you're doing, of course, really, we know, that you're just typing a command in. I mean, maybe you're not. Maybe you're clicking an icon. But ultimately, that's activating a .desktop file, which in turn is activating the exec function of the desktop ini file, and then running a command. So that just launches a process on your machine. That process hooks into a display server or a Wayland compositor, and then the window appears before your very eyes. So those are Wayland clients. also talking to the Wayland compositor is the Linux kernel, specifically EVDEV, the EVDEV component of that. So EVDEV, of course, are the event devices. We spoke about this a couple of episodes ago. It's like a keyboard or a mouse, something that is constantly sending events to the kernel. One of the really big deals about Wayland is that it can run X11 applications in Wayland. So you can kind of like embed, as it were, an X11 application, including a window manager, within a Wayland compositor. There are two different modes you can use to do this. One is typically used, one is not really used very often. Rootful, R-O-O-T-F-U-L, rootful mode. I wish they'd come up with a better term for that one, frankly, but in rootful mode, a foreign window system is represented as a single window all on its own. So you have a native window inside of which are all of your little foreign windows. Foreign in this context being your X11 applications. You can do this even if that big window is a window manager. So you could literally, you can just run your favorite X11 window manager within Wayland. The problem being that foreign windows don't really integrate with the with Wayland, right? They're considered foreign windows, and they are kind of using the rules of the bigger rootful window, which in this case would be the X11 window manager. So you're really, I mean, yes, you are running it in Wayland, but you're not really running Wayland. I mean, you are running Wayland, but you're not interacting with Wayland. Let's put it that way. So the more common method is rootless mode, R-O-O-T-L-E-S-S, rootless mode. And that is where each foreign window, again, in this context, that would be X11, like an X11 application, is treated as a native window, basically. And so it is its own window. It's just a floating window within your Wayland compositor, and you can mix and match. You know, you can have foreign windows launched, you can have native Wayland windows launched. It doesn't matter. They're both on your screen at the same time. You can talk between the two. There's just really no differentiation between the two, except that small rootless window is being rendered, you know, by X11. I mean, it's using the X11 libraries to form what is in that window, but the window itself is being managed by Wayland. So you've got your Wayland compositor that is then being hooked into from X-Wayland. And that's the X-Wayland application, or layer, I should say, is running an X11 application. There's a really great document on the Slackware documentation site, docs.slackware.com, on how to set all of this stuff up. It's not really that hard. The demo does use a thing called LabWC, which is a window manager, no, desktop. It's a WL roots-based stacking compositor aiming to be a lightweight and independent with a focus on simply stacking windows well and rendering some window decorations. Could have fooled me. It looks great. I mean, it might be lightweight, I guess, but yeah, it looks really good. So anyway, this Slackware documentation, I'll kind of go through it quickly, but I'll include the link in the show notes so that you can actually step through it if you want. This forces X-Wayland, because most of your applications on Slackware are X11 applications. So you that's what you're really wanting. So the first thing to do is create a file called /etc/environment, or maybe it already exists. Yeah, I think it already exists. But you edit it, and you add gdk, that's golf delta kilo, _backend equals X11, and then qt_QPA, that's Quebec Papa Alpha, _platform equals XCB. Save that, and you're more or less set up for what environment X11 needs to be aware of. Next step is to configure your StartX, because again, your applications, all everything on Slackware is built for X11. So you're still using X. You're just using it. You're you're putting X into X Wayland. The easy way to do that on Slackware, of course, is to just use XWM config. Then you can just select the window manager or the desktop that you want to use. In this example, I'm using XFCE. Now, to configure LabWC, which is going to be the window manager that contains your desktop, you create an auto start file at in your home directory in the .config/labwc/autostart file. So .config ought to exist, labwc may not, so make that directory and then create a file called autostart. And you need a tiny little shell script in there that says, hash or shebang /bin/sh display equals :1 start x dash dash /user/bin/X Wayland. And then to also quit the Zorg environment and return to a TTY if you want that is next line, WMPID equals $!! Wait $! WMPID pkill dash x labwc. That is that's only required if you want to get out of it depends on what run level you're starting things at. So I have that in mind because I'm just launching this on my virtual Slack machine from the console, from the TTY. Okay, so you need to stop LabWC from decorating the window that is the X Wayland window. You don't want window decoration around your entire screen. You want your desktop to take up your full screen. So for that, you need to put in .config/labwc/rc.xml, open tag labwc_config, close tag, open tag core, close tag, open tag decoration, close tag, client, close decoration, close core, close labwc config. So it's literally one thing, the word client, surrounded by labwc_config, core, decoration. And then you close decoration, you close core, you close labwc_config. That's all you need in rc.xml for labwc. So to start this whole chain of events occurring, you just in your, you start your Slacker machine. I'm assuming you're not booting to SDDM. Then you just type in labwc, and that starts everything you need. It starts Wayland, which starts Wayland, and then X Wayland, and then that calls X init RC, and so on. And then you've got a desktop. You're in Wayland. It's kind of neat. I haven't used this extensively. This is something that I've done as a proof of concept. There are a bunch of caveats on the documentation page about whether, X backlight works or X input works or audio sharing works with Pipewire. So you have to use Wire Plumber and all of these things that may or may not be different from what you're used to. But admittedly, I've not switched over wholesale to just running X Wayland as my environment, but I have done the steps. I've launched X Wayland in my virtual machine. It functions, it works, it does the thing. So that's as far as I've gotten. I've used it for maybe 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes at the most. You should try it if you're interested in it. I mean, it feels very, look, for Fedora, this is ancient history already. They're running Wayland. They don't care. They're not looking back. For Slackware, this is still very cutting edge. And if you switch over to X Wayland, that's cool. But there is going to be configuration to do to make various things work. Or maybe not configuration, but installing something different than, certainly LabWC from Slack builds, that needs to be installed before you can go through this example. And then as the caveat says, you might want to use Wire Plumber if you're using Pipewire and so on. So there are things that you would need to do if you really, want to try this out in real life. That said, it is interesting. It was an interesting experiment. Okay, I'm going to try it. Yeah, we can get through the W's now because there's only two left, and then we're in the X's of the X directory, and boy are there a lot of those, so that'll be a different episode. But Wayland Protocols 1.25. According to the package description, this is Wayland protocols that add functionality not available in Wayland Core. Such protocols either add completely new functionality or extend the functionality of existing protocols in Core. And I guess that must be true, but I mean, if I was looking at these, I would just think that this was documentation. I mean, either that or it's just really, really well commented. It's a bunch of XML files, really, in /usr/share/wayland-protocols. There are three directories there, subdirectories, stable, unstable, and staging. And each of those contain a bunch of XML files. So for instance, there's the xdg-shell.xml. And looking at that, it says interface name equals xdg wm base version 4 description summary, and then there's a big description. Enum name, so here's actually, yeah, I guess this is defining a data set. Entry name equals role, value 0, summary, give wl surface has another role. Entry name defunct surfaces, value 1, summary. So I don't know. I mean, I guess configuration files must be what they are. I'm not 100% clear on like what is reading this and then what this is going to sort of how it's used to build something that provides new functionality. Just don't quite understand the workflow. But then again, haven't really looked into it. Didn't look into the other side of this. All I know is that these are XML files. Oh, here's a good one to look at, maybe. Let's look at this one. User share Wayland, Wayland protocols unstable, Wayland keyboard grab, X Wayland keyboard grab. That seems of interest. So I'm going to go there. The protocol does not guarantee that the grab is ever satisfied, does not require the compositor. Boy, I don't know. For me, this just looks like a lot of documentation, but maybe that's just their style. And what's really happening here is that interfaces are being described. Interface name equals ZWP_XWayland_keyboard grab manager v1. Description is a global interface used for grabbing the keyboard. So yeah, I can't really make heads or tails of it. I will just trust that somehow Wayland Core, the Wayland compositor uses these protocol definitions, I guess I'll call them, to provide new functionality. Don't know how that happens. It must be magical. Okay, next up is WQY Zhenhai Font TTF. This is the Wen Quan Yi Zhenhai font, which I've probably mispronounced. It's a Chinese or CJK outline font with Heiti style, a sans serif style Hanzi glyphs. So again, I don't know what any of that means, but it is it's yet another font. And that brings us to the close of this episode, which means that next episode, we're going to be in the X's of the X directory. There's a bunch that I really probably really, really will not talk about. And those are the XF86-video packages. There's just not enough to say about those. So I'll probably, you know, I'll talk about essentially one and then we'll skip them. And there's others that we've already kind of covered, like XSM, the X Session Manager, there's Xterm. Actually, I might have stuff to say about Xterm and so on. So yeah, you get the idea. There are a lot there, but I don't think it's going to, I think it's a little bit deceptive. But that is the final part of the X directory. Like all of these X's, that's it. That's once I'm done, there's no Y and there's no Z here. So after the X session is up, the X session, after all of the X items in the X directory are complete, we continue on to the XAAP, which are the X applications directory. And those are like, you know, GUI applications mostly. And those are sometimes easier to talk about, you know, like it kind of depends on what they are. There's not actually that many. We are getting close to the end of GNU World Order, is what I'm trying to say. That's exciting. So let's keep going, drink more coffee, get through this eventually, and then the podcast will end. And I will miss you all and you will miss me, but it'll be fine because we had this time together. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time. Thanks for listening. My name's Klaatu. You can reach me anytime over email with feedback or comments, tips, or just to say hi. My email address is klaatu@slackermedia.info. You can also reach me on the Mastodon network, not Klaatu, at mastodon.xyz. The show's intro and outro music is by Fat Chance Lester. You can find their music on bandcamp.com or on gnuworldorder.info. In the archive, you'll find a music directory containing the album from which this music has been extracted. Until next time, thanks for listening and keep the source open.
Completed a mission lasting 6 months and are due for rotation in less than 24 hours. My men are tired. They need a rest. They want to get back to Earth and to their families.